It's time now for Alaska Tracks, an oral history of Alaska people and their way of life, celebrating the rich heritage, wild landscapes, and deeply rooted stories of Alaska past. Alaska Tracks, brought to you by Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware, Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Mont Saw Shop. And now your host, respected wildlife biologist and outdoorsman, Randy Zarnke.
Good afternoon, Interior Alaska. Welcome back to the program we call Alaska Tracks, where we listen to excerpts from interviews I've recorded with veteran hunters and pilots and trappers and guides from all over the state. I'm Randy Zarnke, and I'll be your host. Today's guest of honor will be Gator Meyer of Anderson, Alaska. A man doesn't come by the nickname Gator easily. You'll learn the story soon enough. Gator was a big man in more ways than one. He was physically imposing and had seemingly endless talents and skills. Gator must have hunted or trapped every region of the state at one time or another. He was also a master storyteller, which you will soon find out. In this first section, he talks about his youth and that nickname.
I was born on 10 January 41 in Navarino, Wisconsin, on a dairy farm. When I got to be about 6 years old, my dad sold the farm. We moved to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And that's where I grew up and went to high school. I started trapping at 7. I trapped freshwater shrimp and minnows. My dad helped me make 3 traps. I ended up with 150 commercial ones. And I sold the tackle shops around our area. There were guys doing it for a living that were older guys and married. So when I was in school, they would rob my traps and stuff and catch them once in a while. I'd see somebody walk my trail, and you could tell somebody's in there. But I got smart. I started hiding mine underneath the bank. They didn't know I had a trap under the bank because I had the tie camouflage, too, where you couldn't see where it went. 40 degrees, no school. No heaters in school. They do now, I imagine. My mom would say, it's 40 degrees, so why don't you go down to school today? We were waiting on the bus. Pretty soon she said, they just said no school today. Well, yeah! And I trapped a little bit of coon, which our fur in Florida is not really worth nothing. Tried to catch some gray fox we got down there. Never could get one, but I caught skunks. And I had a dream life. No boy had a better life than I had. Fished the Everglades. I had an airboat. I had a buggy. Fished the Everglades all the time, all the way to Lake Okeechobee. Caught huge bass around my house. I got a lure collection. I've got 300-400 from the 50s. Before I had a license, a guy a little older, he'd take me fishing. We'd be along the highways. People would cast hook up in the bushes along the canal. And I'd stand there and go, man, I see about 4 or 5 lures over there. I said, how the hell you see them? I said, I just see lures. And we'd put a little pram in and go over there, and we'd find 50 of them in a stretch along there. Now, some days we'd find 150, and then we'd divide them up. The best ones we put on the pile, and the junk ones here, some were brand new. They were still shiny. They had no rust on them. The guy probably lost them the first time he tied them on the line.
And then you'd sell those?
I give them away to buddies. Like I said, I've kept some, but I give buddies, get them started fishing, I'd give them one of each kind of plug I had. Had cigar boxes full of them red and white bobbers all the way from the little ones like that to big ones. I'm patient. I learned as a little kid. I could shoot deer in Florida when I was a young guy. And I got them right home. First one I brought home, about got my ass whipped up. I had it on the hood of the car, which you don't do. I was cooking in Florida warm. I got it about 20 miles from the house, me and another guy. I just got it out, though. You got to skin them right away. Come in the driveway. Come out of there. What are you doing? Oh, he was mad. Tried to get a hold of me, but I run, you know. Then he told me, and then I knew he told me the right way. So once you tell me that before, you know I was hunting deer. You live and learn.
Well, is it safe to assume you got your nickname from down there in Florida?
I wrestled alligators in high school in the summer at a gator farm near my house. And folks never knew about it. I got bit one time. Told my dad a dog bit me. I got tips only. A day I could make over 100 tips. Now, this is in the 50s. There's guys, mechanics made like $40 a week.
And you were making $100 a day.
One boat, so there'd be like 3 or 4, 70 people on a boat. I used to go in the best time of year when you had the most tourists. They had another guy too, he's the one that taught me. They had a couple guys, but one of the Seminoles got bit, he wouldn't wrestle anymore. He's scared to death then.
How big were these gators?
You don't go much over 8.5. You can't handle one like that. And they're in a pit, so you got to remember, they're not as wiry. They're not like one you just got out of the wild. That thing there, it's like a bucking bronco. He'll hurt you in a minute. But the trouble is, they think so slow. About the time you're going to pull out, they move, might get you. So you got to be really watch what they're doing. And then these little old ladies just took a look, they get hurt. They give me a dollar. This was in the 50s. And my dad never took any money I made. He said, put some in the bank once in a while.
Were there any real secrets to the wrestling the alligators? How did you avoid getting bit?
Just watch what you're doing. And when you put them over in their back, and rub their belly, they pass out, actually. It has nothing to do with rubbing their belly, but you do it. And then you just go, that's a gator call, and they'll roll back over. They had 9 in that pit. There was 4 we didn't touch. 2 of them would jump at you, come right up. They were dangerous. You knew the ones, but there was none of them you were safe you could get bit. You just had to use your brain on time. You watch what you're doing. I did everything, put my head in their mouth, because the guy that taught me was a very good-looking guy until he got caught in there one time. And you didn't even recognize the guy afterwards. You know, I got bit in the hands. But you don't jerk it out right away. You hold for a second. A gator will get a hold of you, and then he's going to get another chomp. He's trying to get another one. And then you pull out real quick. If you try to jerk, he's going to tighten down on you as you're pulling. But that's how I got the name. And then I got drafted in 1963. It was the last of the draft. So you got 2 years. Did basic training in North Carolina. Then I went to Fort Sill for advanced training artillery. Most of the guys in there were from my area up to Florida that I played football against. So you knew a lot of the guys. Then when I put my 2 years in, and every one of us, we got out of the military. We didn't stay. Before I got drafted, I was a tile setter. Marble, slate, quarry, and all that. I worked at a tile shop on an apprenticeship program with a guy. In the first year, I was setting tile with the regular mechanics. But I had to have 4 years to get a ticket. When I got back, I had my job. You know, they promise you your job. So I went back to the shop, worked a couple months. My brother-in-law was in Alaska here on this radar site. He called me and said, hey, you like to hunt and fish and everything. This would be the perfect place for you. I thought of Alaska like anybody else. I never read nothing about it. It just figured igloos and snow. So I said, I'll come up. So 65, I come up, stayed for about a month, got ready to go back. He said, you want a job? I can get you one here on the site. And I go, yeah. He had me a job. I went back, Florida, got all my things in order. I had a 55 Chevy I just had restored. Drove that up and ended up in Alaska.
Now, when you refer to the site, I assume that you're referring to Clear.
Clear radar site, yeah. I worked as a warehouse. So then I had to become a lead man in the warehouse.
Once you had your year of residency in, I imagine you dived into everything.
1970, I started traps out to Tanana Flat. And then I trapped Healy, too, and along the road still. I started a little bit, and everything I learned myself. Now, an old trapper would tell me something once in a while. Usually they don't tell you things, but they got to like me and they'd tell me things. But most of the stuff was trial and error, my stuff, common sense. Links, so common sense. And the main thing about the canines, you got to be clean. I'd buy a bunch of them monkey face gloves, and I'd use them on one set for wolves. I threw it in a bag, got home, she put them to the washing machine again. In the early years, I walked all my trails, snowshoes, like 6 miles off the road, make a big loop. And I had one in pack baskets like they use in Maine, and then I finally bought me a snow machine. I used to catch a lot of fox. That 1 year I caught 31 fox, and I never set many sets for fox. What I do is I have tie downs, and fox move around just like lynx do in pockets. There'll be a lot of fox sign here, and when I get the rabbits down, you'll see they're over here now, so I'll set them, and that's the way I trap. There's nothing around, I just pull the set. The tie down's still there, a stake in the ground, because you couldn't get it out in the winter time. But anyhow, unless you use the handyman jack. Because I'd put it in places where in the summer is water. They just freeze right in there. And they were places you always caught them. I had them along the highway, too. There are some places the snare's coming out of the tree. You can't even take the snare off. The tree grew around it.
Been there for so long, huh?
Yeah. But I pad fox. I don't just make a set because there's fox tracks in an area here. You run a main trail, and then you go off trails. I would see notice where a fox would cross the trail and go down another little trail. Maybe 3 times a month, I'd say he's using that. And then I make a set there. Remembered that, and I go, well, he's been coming through here a while. He's got to be local. he uses this once in a while, so I put a snare on it, or a trap. I had a fox, young one, get away one time. He went through the snare, and I had him by the tail, and I tried to grab him, and it broke off. But anyhow, he didn't take off right away. He was still hung in or something, so I went back to the sled to get my little pistol. I went back there, and something went by me. I looked, it's a fox. He's going down a trail. A guy that worked out here caught that fox, told me he got a fox with half a tail. I said, well, yeah, I got the other half. It was 20 miles from where I got it. I remember our lynx dropped off quick. I didn't trap no lynx for about 5 seasons. Slow population. I was doing it for myself. And then the guys that around here found out that I wasn't trapping a lynx. They go, well, if we don't get him, he'll get him. That's their attitude. That ain't an attitude to have. And when you got a lot of people trapping, you know there's some guys that never quit. But I always give them a break. Once they start taking hold, they'll go though. And I watch the rabbits. They'll tell you too what's going on. And I'm glad they got the lynx season, not the first month. They got it when they're in the best shape. Because I've seen lynx guys had. I know they caught them in November. Sometimes I'd come out with like 6-7 cats. Some would be kittens. So I'd put them in a bag and I had one in each hand. They were easy to snare. I used to snare them too. The 2 biggest lynx I ever got, I got in the canyon down there when I first opened the highway through there. I'd get across that bridge. They were between 45 and 47 pounds. Looked like a bulldog. I couldn't leave it the first one. When I trapped and get a springy lynx, I'd pull my sets because they're going to all start now. It's like you had crop of something that's starting to die, you're going to pull it off. I pull my sets. I don't care if the season's still open. And they always had a season too early for lynx. They're too brown yet. Wolves, I wasn't even trapping them in November. First years I did. Then I waited until December until they was getting a pretty good fur. Then it got better as it went on until springtime. I watched that on cats and that fox. I turned fox loose. I got the trap off the foot. Get back, sit on the machine. Lynx wake up. He looks around. He don't even know he's free yet. And I just wait a little bit. And he looks at me. He still thinks he's in there. And then finally I'll throw a little stick over there or something. And he'll get up and he realizes. And then takes off. Fox, you got to hold him down. It's harder.
Lots of great stories from Mr. Meyer. Let's take a break here for a word from our sponsors. Thanks to those sponsors for supporting this program. Now back to our interview with Gator Meyer of Anderson.
How about years when you did really good on the trap line, or years when you thought you were going to do good and for whatever reason the harvest wasn't what you expected?
You know, in them days we had good years always. We never had no marten in the flats for years. These native people in Indiana told me they never seen marten tracks out there. Well, in the mid-70s, all of a sudden, I started to see some marten tracks a little bit. And then one year, I caught 3 on the Nana Trail. I wasn't even going to try no marten. I just made like 5-6 sets. The next year, I go to see if there's any marten sign. Man, alive, they're all over the place. So I would trap the other side of the First River one year, and I'd get around 30 every year. The next year, I'd trap this side, alternate. But since these fires, we ain't got no marten out there.
You mentioned catching wolves. Did you have any special secrets that you care to share with us, how to catch them?
I pattern wolves, like people pattern deer. You hear hunters talk about they pattern deer. Their movements is what they're patterning. I'd watch the movements of the wolves. They always come through the same areas until you caught the leader. Once you caught the leader, they won't come through the same areas. Now you have to figure out where they're coming from and their new route. But they move around.
Do you prefer foothold traps or snares?
Snare. But I'd never set many snares. The most sets I ever put in are like 5. Healy maybe 2. But I might have some snares and traps mixed on a set with a moose head on it. But I would never make the set until I figured out where the wolves were going or I knew they'd go into. I would put a piece of hide in there or something to see if the pack would go into it first.
And then you'd set it up after.
Once they noticed they go into it and weren't scared, yeah. We figured out I've taken about 72 wolves and 34 wolverines. Some of the wolves I counted were stolen from it. I know were taken out of my set. And one time I thought I had the guy down the river. We were breaking trail. And he come in from the Nana Trail. And I said, oh, we'll follow him. I broke the trail all the way. Ted on the sled back there behind me. And it was like that deep. A couple feet. Soft snow. I said, I'll go right to the guy's house. I figured he turned off and come out of clear lumber over here on the highway. Then I'd go right to his house easy, but he went straight to Nenana, so I'd turn around. Once you get down there, you wouldn't know where he went. And when he gets in town, they're driving snow machines all over. So I talked to the guy that was a cop there, and he was keeping his eyes open, but you're never going to catch him. They'd rather sell it. In the trail that they go in, I never walked their trail. And when I checked the sets off the trail, I'd go in from the side and look. Or I'd see wolf tracks that went down where I made the set originally, and I go, oh, pack come through here. You know, and I only had about 5 wolf sets, but you got to pattern them. If you catch the leader, they change. They might not ever come through where you've seen them before. New leader. He takes over. It's like a new boss at work, moves the furniture his way. The biggest wolf I ever got weighed like 132.5 pounds. They were all over 8 feet, the ones that weighed. I've got about 7. I didn't weigh the other one. It was a real big one. I was just curious what they go. And that one had no food in them. Dean said they could be 30, 40 pounds more if they'd on a moose scale. But I've got that many really big ones. I used to use an 8-foot board like everybody. Dean gave me the measurements of the boards when I first started making them. And I went to 8.5 foot because I got a couple of them big ones. The others would hang over. And then you'd have to pull them too much out.
Now, was there a lot of competition around at the time?
When I was trapping the heyday of it, and the guy from Fishing Game told me that there was 200 trapper licenses bought between Nenana and Cantwell. The most trouble I had was from some guys here that I showed how to trap. When they were young, I was helping them. It depends upon who you show, what you show. They go and steal my fur. I caught them sometimes.
You had a pretty serious discussion then, I imagine.
Well, I caught a guy in Healy one time, and Ted, he was with me. He might have been 6 years old or 7. And they were climbing these ice falls down in the canyon. But they were against trappers, so they would take sticks in the traps or take the traps and throw them in the bushes. We come in there one morning. Ted's with me. And I go, oh, the guy's there again. I look in the creek, and I see a pole sticking up. They put in the ice. I walk over to the edge. And they had a ropes on it they were hanging on. These falls, they go way down to the river bottom. I yelled there, hey, so what are you doing? Ted starts screaming, don't shoot him now. I didn't even have a gun out. That's panicked them. And they go, sir, honest to God, please don't do it. I wasn't going to hurt him. I may act like I was going to. I said, I'll cut that damn cable.
So after that, they didn't bother you anymore?
They didn't go there. One year, when the links were ringing 225, 250, I had 15, 20 links stolen in that canyon. I couldn't catch a guy. But I've never seen no wheel tracks where the guy walked that along the road. He lived down in that canyon where the hotels and stuff are now. So I kept changing my days, my times. I'd go down there right from work and try to get him. So I seen the guy on the trail. He's had a link set. And there was a link set breaking off a stick. He was getting something to kill the lakes. So I take my big park off. It was about 40 below. Snuck up behind him. Said, hey. He turned around. He had a long old beard hanging there, and I grabbed a hold of that beard. Said, you son of a bitch, you're the one stealing my lakes. He was trying to get me back. I couldn't hit him with the left. I had his beard, so I keep putting my arm up, and finally I hit him hard enough, I knocked him out. Scared the hell out of me. I was shaking. It scared me so bad. I go, God, I hope I didn't kill that guy. So then I didn't say nothing to the wife for about a week, and I go down and check it like every other day, and I looked from the road. I couldn't see in there good. Finally, one day I told the wife, I said, I'll probably have to go to jail or something because I found that guy that was stealing them cats. But he never said nothing to nobody. 7 years later, I used to eat at a little restaurant down there. The guy that owned it, I come in one morning, had breakfast, and there were some guys sitting at a table, about 6 guys at a round table. Matter of fact, it was a cop at Healy. There was only his table was him. He said, come and sit with me, Gator. Well, now the one guy said, how you doing, Gator? I said, oh, pretty good, guys. The guy that saw the links was sitting there, but he didn't probably shave the beard and never had one again. I didn't recognize him. And so I went and ate breakfast. They left out of there. Then I left and went down in the canyon checking my sets. And when I come back, I thought I'd eat lunch there and then go home and get some sleep for go to work tonight. I went back and ate lunch. And the guy known as Gator, he says, you beat somebody up one time down here or something? I said, you know, I don't mess with nobody, really, unless some guy starts in trouble. I'm not going to walk away. But he says, well, I'll tell you what happened. You know, this morning when you come in, when you went out, that one guy at the table said, don't ever try to steal his fur. He says, that guy is crazy. He'll kill you. So I knew he was still around. But, you know, I didn't have no trouble anymore. Sure scared me, though. I like to teach people trapping, but I got some of the wrong ones. I took them on my lines. See, that was wrong there. I shouldn't have done it. They knew exactly where I trapped. They checked my line when I wasn't around. They knew I was working. But I've caught a few, too. I look at them drew marks. One time, years ago, in the early years of the canyon being open, the game warden down at Catwell sealed some wolves and a wolverine for me one time. Next time I checked the line, I see somebody had been up to the set. And I looked down, and I go, son of a gun, that's Art's foot. It's because he was a small feet he had. And he wore regular insulated boots because he's in a truck. I seen his tracks when up, he checked where the wolverine was caught. I seen where he walked up and looked there, and then he left. I seen him a week later, and I said, God, you didn't trust me? Art, we've known each other for years. I don't do nothing illegal. And he says, how do you know? I said, your boots. He said, how the hell you know that? I said, well, I went to the house to see her that day. You had them boots on when you come outside. And I looked down at your boot and looked at the tread. I said, I've caught guys that's stealing fur on my line on their boot marks. Because I measured it and everything. I draw it in a little notebook. I carried a pencil, a lead pencil, and a little notebook in my pocket. And if they set a trap in my area, I write a little note, put it in a little zip bag, and trip their trap and put it in there. The note's sticking out. Because you can't steal their trap, because now you're in trouble. And they'd call me, Gator, I was just trapping coyotes. So I didn't know you trapped there. I said, damn, that's awful funny. 20 feet away, there was a link set facing you there. You didn't see the link set there? You know, I know he seen the link set, because he had the set for links. He was going to try to get to links before it got to my set. He pulled it right away. Them guys usually pull it down. I look for that sign of thieves' tracks. One, I thought they took a lynx, but they got a fox. What happened was a fox was in the set. They took the fox, and a lynx come into the set before I got there to check it and walked around there. And I figured it was a lynx that was in the set because his tracks were there. He just come around there sniffing around. And I caught him coming. I was coming in here to the house there to get ready to take a shower and get some sleep. And here they come, stopped in the middle of the road. All doped up and everything. I said, lift your feet. Put your feet up like that. I look. Yeah, lift your feet. And I had the two guys. But the reason why I knew it was, he'd lost his little ID card at the set. Fell out of his pocket or something. Right away, is this yours? That evening, another guy that I know in town here brings over this fox. He said, yeah, and he said, they ain't scared of you. I said, they better be scared of me if I catch them on it. Daryl's in the post office one day, and one of the guys, he's in line in front of her and talked about, we got to take that lynx in and get sealed. Well, I had a lynx taken 2 days before that. So I called. I said, this is Gator here. I want you to tell me if this guy brought you a lynx to be sealed. He says, Gator, I couldn't tell you anyhow. And I let it go. In the early years, I never could get pictures of a lot of fur because fur buyer come by all the time. We were younger and married, needed the money always, you know.
So as soon as you had a chance to sell it?
Dean took them off the boards ready. Dean is interesting. And I'll tell you, they're the best fur buyer ever. I've tried them all. He run all over the state, Dean did. Dean was buying for Whitaker on the Kenai. Then Dean started his own business, so I just found everything to Dean. Because the percentage that Dean made when he bought the fur for Whitaker, he took that off, give you a break. So he was getting more money because Whitaker, he had to pay Dean, and Dean said he'd give it to the trapper. He's the most honest guy I ever known. He's a great person. When the wife goes shopping or something, I'd ride to town just so I could sit in there and talk to Dean. And one day Dean was busy, he was taking some fur from some guys. I kept seeing this one guy kind of peek out. And I go, huh, I want to see what's going on back there. So I got up and I staked over there as I looked in the room and the guy was putting some lure in his pocket. And I come out and I said to Dean, them guys got some lure in their pocket. He goes, okay. So they come out and they have one little bottle of lure. He says, is that it? Dean looks at me and winks. And I go, what about the bottles you put in your pocket when I was back there? The guy goes, oh, yeah, pulls out these bottles.
That's all for today's episode of Alaska Tracks. I hope you enjoyed listening to Gator. Tune in next week if you want to hear more from this exceptional outdoorsman.
You have been listening to Alaska Tracks, a blend of interviews, storytelling, and firsthand accounts from Alaskans who know the land and carry forward the traditions of this remarkable state. Alaska Tracks has been brought to you by Ginger Orem with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding and Extreme North Trailers, Rod Saw Shop, and Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware. Join us next Saturday for another episode of Alaska Tracks, about Alaskans, for Alaskans, by Alaskans.